Hi, everyone. Welcome to Live Greatly. I'm your host, Crystal Bauer, and I'm so excited to be here today sharing some wonderful information with all of you. The goal with this podcast is to provide information to help you achieve optimal health in mind, body, and spirit to attain success. As background, I'm a speaker on multiple wellness topics, including optimizing mental health, managing stress, and building resilience. I'm a lecturer at the university level and also an adjunct PBL facilitator for Northwestern's Physician Assistant Program. I'm a fellow in the Andrew Weil Integrative Medicine Fellowship through the University of Arizona, and I'm also a physician assistant with a history working in integrative psychiatry and functional medicine. I'm also a Reiki master, and I have a very strong interest in spirituality and how it affects your overall well-being. Now, just a quick disclaimer that all the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are purely the opinions of the author, and they're not intended to provide medical advice or treatment recommendations. The contents of this podcast are intended for informational and educational purposes only, and always seek the guidance of your physician or other qualified health professional when you have any questions regarding your specific health, changes to diet and exercise, or any medical conditions. And before taking any medication, including any over-the-counter drugs, supplements, vitamins, herbs, you should always consult a physician or qualified healthcare professional. So let's jump into the topic for today's podcast. And today we are very lucky to have an amazing guest, Dr. Susan Rattay, who's a fellow with me in the Andrew Weil Integrative Medicine Fellowship. Dr. Rattay is a board-certified family physician. She is the director of osteopathic education at University Hospitals Osteopathic Consortium in Cleveland, Ohio, where she oversees roughly 150 osteopathic medical students and residents. She works in an underserved primary care clinic in Ohio, and she's able to do all these wonderful things professionally while also being a fantastic mother in her blended family with five children, ages 22 to 6. And she also recently started a social media presence with her identical twin sister called Dr. Twins. So welcome, Susan. I'm so happy that you're here today to talk with me, and I'm just so grateful that you agreed to be my guest.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast. This is exciting.
Yeah, so I kind of wanted just to start by talking about what inspired you to get into medicine. You know, and I'm curious about whether or not it was an easy or a hard path for you.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny because I don't really have any physicians in the immediate family of mine. I do have an aunt and an uncle who are physicians. So I'm not really sure where that kind of spark took off, but I do recall being, more like pulled towards math and sciences growing up, and I struggled with reading at a young age, but seemed to compensate with hard work and, other, skill sets as I developed in school. But I always wanted to help others, and as I went through my medical training, realized that primary care was great because you could have that longitudinal relationship with your patients and also get to learn more about the family dynamics with also seeing the patient's parents, sometimes their siblings, their spouse, and even their children. So that was always really cool to me as I kind of followed my journey in medical school into residency training. You ask if it's hard, if it was easy. Well, I think initially it's very easy because you have these, dreams and hopes, and everyone kind of starts the same path in high school, thinking about they can really do anything, right? The sky's the limit. And then you start getting into it and it gets, more rigorous. And I think it was almost a blessing in disguise, not really knowing many people in medicine, because looking back, you just kind of reflect and you're, oh my gosh, how did I go to school for 14 years? I was privileged to give a little career talk at my son's grade school for a bunch of sixth graders. And, the question comes up, how long were you in school? And then you tell them the number of years and their eyes just like get huge. And I think sometimes it's not a good thing to think about the lengthy process to get there, but do it in a stepwise fashion and just take one day at a time. So was it easy? I think the decision was easy. Clearly the path has had its hard moments, but very rewarding.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And after knowing you, I definitely see your drive and dedication, and it's very impressive. And I was curious, looking back at your life, how do you think you've become so successful in so many areas? Like, what do you think, drove you to be so dedicated and to be so passionate about what you're doing?
Well, I'd have to say part of it stems from my childhood. And I think, interestingly enough, more and more research is coming out regarding the impact of childhood on individuals' lives, even in the realm of mood disorders and resiliency training and how they handle stress in their lives. I was very fortunate. I had a very supportive upbringing. I had parents who both worked very hard, so they exemplified a very, hard work ethic. My father, he's a general contractor, so nowhere in the medical profession, but he's still working full time at age 65. And, growing up, he would take my sister and I to work with him on the weekends, and he'd have us do all the kind of non-skilled labor, so like sanding and cleaning and things like that. And I still recall a moment where he would say, "How was work today, girls?" And we would look at him with a scowl on our face and like, "We hate you," because it was so labor intensive and exhausting. And then he would smile and say, "Well, then stay in school." So we always had this kind of constant reminder that, an education is very helpful with getting to where you want to be in life and having good resources for a good career path.
Yes, so true. I remember similar things too with my dad talking about how he worked at a shoe store when he was younger and, just different things where it's like, okay, if you want to achieve your dreams, like you've really got to go to school, you've really got to work hard. And I think that's just really well said. So, you're a really busy woman, you're a mom, you're a doctor. How do you balance personal life and work?
So, it's always, it's like the sage old question, how do we do all these things? And, I'm going to give my little plug to all those working moms out there. You're doing an excellent job. I don't know a single male physician who had a child during residency or nursed for 8 to 10 months in residency. So, I commend all of those working moms that do all these things at one time. But I think looking back, I think what you have to learn as life becomes more complicated is the difference between contentment and complacency, right? And so knowing when, to accept the situation, and recognize the happiness and the fulfillment and the successes you've had in the different facets in your life, and then what areas maybe you don't want to be complacent or not continue to focus on improvement and bettering yourself. So I think that's one thing that kind of we struggle with is where can we say, oh, we can continue to work on and get better, whether it be like raising our children and setting time aside for our spouse and learning more about our particular content in our careers to better our patient care experience, and this other balance with contentment with maybe the laundry might not get done this week as efficiently as we would like, or it might go another day before we switch out the sheets or give the dog a bath. And so, it's learning to balance, what is kind of most important in your relationships and in your career versus the day-to-day things that maybe aren't as important, but sometimes we get hard on ourselves about. Mm-hmm. I have one girlfriend, and I'll get down to this maybe in another question, but the power of support and the power of your girlfriends and other career-oriented women, and you can have these conversations and feel so much better about yourself knowing that other women are struggling with these same things. But she relayed a kind of this analogy to me. She's like, think of juggling life like juggling balls. Some balls are made of glass and some are made of rubber. It's okay to let the rubber ones drop. Just don't let the glass ones drop. And so it's identifying, what is more important or most important at that particular time. And the rubber balls will still be there when you're ready to get to them.
That's awesome. I love that. I look back on my career and I was home with my daughter and my son for 6 years, and I, mm-hmm. It was intimidating to get back out there and to put myself back out there. And, you talked about being complacent. I liked being a stay-at-home mom, but at the same time, I felt like I wasn't as fulfilled with using my talents and giving back and, you know, that drive when you're in healthcare to want to help people. So I think it was wonderful that I was able to do that. But it definitely took courage, I think, to get back out there and to have the confidence to be able to do that. And I'm just so thankful that I had, you know, the support to help me with that. And, you know, interestingly, when you were talking about juggling all this stuff, like when I went back to work, I still felt like I wanted to do it all at home. You know, I still felt like I want to, you know, I should handle the laundry. I should be handling all the groceries and the cooking. And, you know, and then I felt guilty about taking time for myself, you know, about having time to get that self-care in. So I felt more grounded and more able to kind of share my talents with the world and to be present for my kids and my husband. But I think as I've been working more, I've found a better balance. But do you ever have that? I'm sure you do, but like, do you ever feel like you're just stretched so thin, like as a mom, working mom, with all of your relationships, do you feel like, I guess, do you ever have guilt about taking time for yourself?
Oh, most definitely. You know, and that's where, once again, I think it comes with time and, you know, learning a little bit about yourself and how you identify. So like you said, you know, people say, oh, it's gender roles. Like women shouldn't feel like they have to do the laundry or they have to do those domestic duties. But what people, but the flip side of that is that we want to do those things. You know, we are innately as humans kind of want to be caretakers, right? And we want to do these things for our family, but you have to realize you can't, there's only so many hours in a day and you still need to take time for yourself. So I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think one of the things that I've learned that has created my success is knowing when to ask for help, right? Knowing when to have that crucial conversation with my partner or, you know, people at work and saying, you know what, enough is enough. You need to help me this next week because I have a lot of other things going on. Like I'm delegating the laundry and the dinner to you this week. And, you know, that talk that might not be super pressing or can be rescheduled gets rescheduled. And so understanding your limits and knowing when to reach out for help, I think is also really important. And then last but not least, when you get to that point where you're like, oh my God, I can't do it, having a conversation with a friend or a family member who is in the same phase of life as you, I think sometimes brings perspective and gives you that kind of reassurance that it's not just you feeling that way. Community is so important during this time of building careers and raising family and all those things.
I completely agree. And it's interesting because it's not like there are any expectations, you know, from my husband or from my family for me to do these things. It was more like self-imposed, I guess, expectations of myself, you know, and I think I'm just so much more balanced and happier now that I've kind of lightened up those expectations and understanding, like, you know, if I spread myself too thin, I'm not going to give as high of quality in all of the different areas of my life. You know, it really is so important that I take time to exercise and meditate and do the things that I enjoy so I can be all the things I want to be in my life. And, you know, on that note, I think there's a lot of talk about burnout, and there's a lot of burnout, I think, in a lot of professions, but you and I both being in healthcare, I think that's a really big problem that we're facing that I think innately kind of as a caregiver, there's this sense of you have to sacrifice, like you need to give of yourself. And I don't like that. I think it goes against kind of what we're trying to do for people, that we're missing that for ourselves sometimes, that I think you need to take care of yourself in order to be able to really give very well. So I'm curious what your thoughts are about kind of healthcare professionals and burnout, and wondering if you've ever gone through burnout yourself.
Yeah, I think you can't be a healthcare provider nowadays without having some characteristics of burnout. Whether I've had full blown burnout, I don't know if I've had that. But definitely there are days that it is challenging sometimes to connect with patients, because connecting with patients takes a lot of energy, you know, to do it well. And if you're not in the right mind frame and putting that patient first, it can be very challenging and actually sometimes detrimental to good patient care. So I see that it's a really important thing for us to address and educate. So I take a lot of residents and students, and it's really sad because I actually see some characteristics of burnout even as young as some of the medical students, and they haven't even started their careers. And so you question kind of what has changed, if anything, and what we can do to help that. I do agree that time management is a huge thing regarding burnout. Setting limitations and overextending yourself, being able to stand up for yourself as a professional in expectations. So I think those are some of the few things. Once again, burnout is, you know, losing the connection to your work, right? And even though sometimes it is overwhelming to take medical students and residents in an already busy clinic, they do tend to reground me and remind me of, you know, the reason I went into medicine. And sometimes just being a mentor and having residents and students with me is a good way to reconnect me to my work and to my patients. So that's one thing. Reflection. Oh my gosh, I can't even. Gratitude journaling and reflecting on your day's work. So overall, I think physician burnout can be recognized, treated, prevented, however you would like to put it, by kind of reflection, connecting yourself to your patients and your work, and also finding tools or ways to make electronic medical record keeping and the paperwork part of the job at a minimum or more proficient.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. And one thing that I think also is helpful is, you know, you've kind of mentioned this, but remembering why you're doing what you're doing. So kind of coming back to those core values, is I think sometimes we can get discouraged, and I've been there. It's like, you're doing the best you can, and then you get negative, you know, maybe a negative experience or a negative feedback or something that kind of sets you back and I guess maybe hurts your spirit a little bit. So I think remembering what it's all about and coming back to why you're doing this. And it's been shown that writing these things out can be really helpful for people too. And even if you're going into, you know, for people who are in school, if you're going into a big test or a stressful event or talk, whatever it may be, kind of writing out your core values and different times that you've been able to really succeed in those areas. I think that also can be really beneficial for people. And, you know, with me personally, with burnout, like looking back on my career, I realized that with one-on-one patient care, I think I definitely felt depleted after extended time in certain fields. And implementing those self-care practices made such a huge difference for me. So for me, it was exercise and meditation, you know, and those were the two things that I felt really helped me be grounded, and practicing mindfulness and trying to really be present, you know, with each experience. So, you know, I think you kind of covered some of the questions I was going to ask you as far as like the tips for people who are trying to prevent burnout. So I'm going to go to a question about your residents that you've taught, and, you know, with all the residents and students that you see, I'm curious if there's some qualities or behaviors that you've noticed that may lead them to higher levels of success professionally and also personally. Like, who seems, I guess, the happiest to you?
I typically find that the students and the residents who are undecided, who are still very open-minded to suggestion and learning just kind of general patient care and techniques for interacting with patients, tend to do much better and get much more out of the rotation. And I think we can learn that, we can apply that kind of mentality to life, that if we're kind of open-minded and more present in our daily experiences, we're all going to get much more out of it. And so I always just tell residents to be successful on this rotation, just show up. So show up prepared, show up rested, show up wanting to learn, ask questions, be engaged. That is probably the most important part of any clinical rotation or experience you can get. You know, and that also applies to other really good lifestyle habits, right? Think of going to the gym or starting a new ritual or routine, right? Showing up is the hardest part. Mm-hmm. So getting to the gym in the morning, that's the hardest part, is just showing up and getting there. You know, putting yourself out there for a gathering or an event or a talk or trying something new, just showing up is the hardest part. Once you're there, then you can immerse yourself in the experience, mm-hmm. And learn something or take something home and improve upon your experiences of life, which then turn around and help you be a better clinician, help you be a better, you know, partner or parent, because you've gained some other experiences to apply.
Mm-hmm. That's great. On that same kind of subject, now mm-hmm. switching it to your patients, you know, do you notice mm-hmm. anything in your patients, qualities, you know, behaviors that you feel contribute to their overall health and happiness?
So yeah, and when I'm asked about my patients, I always try to find an example, right? So yesterday I had this lovely lady. She's a cancer survivor. You know, she's very resilient in that way. She's been struggling with a little bit of depression, anxiety, and she's setting herself up for counseling. And, you know, it's very unusual, which surprises me, that she was very excited to start counseling. You know, she was ready to show up and apply some of the tips and tricks and coping strategies that her counselor, she was hoping to get out of, which is, you know, very unusual. I usually get the opposite effect, where patients are very, you know, closed-minded to physical therapy or to counseling, and they're just going through the motions, and so they're not really getting a whole lot out of those experiences. But she, on the other hand, was very excited, and I commended her for being open to that. And she said, you know what, I've made it this far. I'm very resilient. She's like, 'cause I've always just made small milestones to reach that were reachable that she could celebrate. Mm-hmm. So if she had to do chemo, she would, you know, celebrate with each week that she completed chemo, mm-hmm. you know, and she would celebrate those small milestones. And I think those are important. Those are really important so that we can continue to give ourselves credit where credit is due and keep us moving in a forward direction versus always dwelling on the negatives.
Right.
That can, you know, stunt our growth and development as humans. Mm-hmm. So that's the first part. I mean, I broke it down into four things: good sleep, move your body, moderation in diet and alcohol, and healthy relationships. People were meant to have companionship, you know, they were meant to have community. And when that community is breached or they don't have that support, the mental health really declines. Mm-hmm. So fostering healthy relationships is very important for just global health.
Mm-hmm. Right. I completely agree with that. And that was kind of going to be another question I had for you, is what do you think is needed for optimal mental health and resilience? And I think you answered that question. Is there anything else you wanted to add to that?
I mean, the only other thing would be, you know, gratitude, recognizing the good, the glass being half full mentality is actually really helpful. I can't stress sleep enough. Reduced sleep increases anxiety, depression, weight gain, low testosterone levels, you know, irritability. It's so important for that rest, restore, recover, and to heal, part of life that we all need. So,
right. I think we're just about coming to a close. So I wanted to talk about your recent kind of social media presence with your sister. So you just started the social media presence, Dr. Twins. And I was hoping you could just tell everyone a little bit about that.
So this is very exciting for me because my twins, my identical twin sister and I, we both were pre-med majors in undergrad, and then she took more the manual medicine route of education and shadowed PTs and chiropractors and ended up going to chiropractic school, whereas I went to end up going to medical school and osteopathic medical school where I could be trained in additional manual techniques in medicine, and we have always dreamed of working together. However, she ended up taking a job on the west side of Cleveland, and I'm residing in the east side of Cleveland, so it would be very hard for us to be physically together, but we thought that it would be super fun to kind of pool our experiences, utilizing also our twin nuances to create a little blog and website and social media presence for sharing our experience as moms, as doctors, as teachers, as professionals, and then also as twins. So it's really fun. We've really been enjoying kind of talking and dreaming and coming up with content and, you know, running ideas past each other. And so it's been really actually really fun for us because it's adding another layer of our already relationship that is, you know, so unique and special to us.
That's awesome. And could you tell everyone how they could follow you? Is it just Dr. Twins or I think your Instagram?
Yeah, so probably the two best places to follow us would be Instagram. And so we are at Dr. Twins_. And then we are at The Dr. Twins on Facebook. And we have a website that is just www.drtwins.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Susan. Anything else you wanted to say before we close?
I just appreciate this opportunity. And Crystal, you are just fabulous. And I cannot wait to see you in Arizona this summer.
Yay. Right back at you. So thank you so much for being my guest today. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And you can follow Live Greatly on Instagram at livegreatly_CO and on Facebook at livegreatly.co. And if you like what you heard today, please subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And until next time, this is Crystal Bauer with Live Greatly, encouraging you all to awaken your ultimate potential.